let's go back to the beginning. My mum and dad were the actor and actress in the film Born Free, which was made in 1964 and released in 1966. And I was around, but I was very small at the time. And we moved as a family to Kenya for nearly a year while the film was made, and got bitten by the wildlife bug, I guess. We've been happily infected ever since. And it all came to a head, so that the film was about, as people may recall if they've seen it, you know, about an orphan lioness little cub that eventually is successfully released to the wild by George and Joy Adamson, against all the sort of odds and against the advice of the government officials and everything else. After filming was made, three of the lions that were used in the film were given to George, and my mum and dad lobbied for this, and he returned them to the wild. So it wasn't just Elsa, but it was Girl and Boy and Ugus who were returned to the wild. And then George went on for the rest of his life, right up until his murder in 1989, returning lions to the wild. And he became a really close family friend. When he came to the UK, which he only did a couple of times in 20 years, he came and stayed at the house. He sat upstairs with my dad for a month, and they recorded conversations which were then turned into his book, My Pride and Joy, which was a bestseller. And then, of course, we went to see him in his camp up in Kora in northern Kenya, very remote, very inhospitable but amazing countryside, full of thorns and snakes and elephants and lions and the rest of it. It just truly boy's own stuff. And then all this kind of informed us to the point that when an elephant that my mum and dad had worked with in a film in the late 60s, an elephant called Poli Poli, which means slowly, slowly in Swahili, was euthanized at the London Zoo in 1983, age 17. We took a deep breath and we thought, is anyone looking at zoos? What's going on in zoos that a little elephant can be euthanized, age 17? She should be with her family. Elephant females live with their families for their entire lives, etc., etc., etc. So we formed this little, I don't know what you would call it now, sort of tiny little ginger group called Zoo Check, which was going to look at what was going on in zoos. Were they delivering on their conservation promises? What was going on with animal welfare, education, all the justifications that zoos come up with? And to be frank, we were pretty disappointed with what we found. So therefore, this little organization, which the then director of London Zoo described as a 9-day wonder, and what on earth did we know about anything? And to be fair, we probably didn't know very much at the time at all. We're still going 38 years later. He's retired and is no longer doing what he's doing. And we changed our name to the Born Free Foundation in the early 90s to better reflect our ambitions, which was to keep wildlife in the wild. That's what we want to do, keep wildlife in the wild, and put our time and our effort and our money and our resources into making that reality true.
When we think of Born Free, we do think of lions, but it's not just lions, is it? It's all wild animals.
It is. It very much is all wild animals, Lucy. We started because of an elephant, and lions were feature very large in our minds, but we were on tigers, Ethiopian wolves, gorillas, chimpanzees, pangolins, cheetah, all sorts of different species. Because, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, the natural world is in crisis. And the reason it's in crisis is because of us. We've destroyed so much habitat. We've broken it up into small pieces. We've exploited wild species to the hilt. You know, if we can make money out of it, we most certainly try to do so. And we just don't think that that's what we were. That's not why we're here. If we're going to take our role as guardians of nature responsibly, then we have to truly look after nature. We have to preserve it, not just for its sort of aesthetic value, and because elephants are amazing, which of course they are, and lions and tigers and all the rest of it. But because without this complex relationship between the natural world and the humans who also are part of it, we will suffer. And we're seeing it now. If you need to get your reality check, it's just look at what's happening to the world because of what we've done to it and because of how much we've abused nature. And we are, at the moment, I'm afraid, on a one-way path to sort of self-destruction, and we're going to take everything else with us.
One of the initiatives that Born Free has been taking part in lately is Walk on the Wild Side. Would you be able to tell me a little bit about that, please?
Sure. Well, it's a lovely thing, and quite a number of people around the world have joined in. It really was to coincide with World Lion Day on the 10th of August. And on that day, and sometimes a bit before that day, people who were taking part in Walk on the Wild Side walked 20,000 steps for lions, because there are just 20,000 wild lions left in the world. And you know, if I think back to when Born Free, the film, was made, there could have been anywhere between 100 and 200,000 wild lions in Africa. And here we are, 2022, and there's 20,000 wild lions left. In many countries, their situation is incredibly perilous. So we named this year, you know, we named it ourselves as our Year of the Lion, because we wanted to draw attention to lions, and also it was sort of in recognition and memory of my late dad, who would have been 100 this year had he lived, you know, and he was a lion of a guy. And so this is our Year of the Lion. We've all done our bit. Lots of us have done a walk for lions. We're going to keep on fundraising. And actually, as part of that whole experience, we have an amazing exhibition of lion sculptures, life-size bronze lion sculptures. Now, they were in London up until April, and then they moved to Newcastle until early July. They're now in Bristol until early October, when they'll go to Edinburgh. And everyone who's seen them, without exception, has just been blown away. We've got cubs, we've got pairs of cubs, we've got big adult lions, and we've even got Elsa, representation of Elsa, standing on top of a 4x4. It looks very much like a Land Rover to me.
I loved it, I have to say, and especially it was at Millennium Green, and when the buses were going past and you could see the people on the buses not quite sure what it was all about. It looked so surreal to see these lions, although they were bronze. They were really magnificent, right in the middle of London. What will happen to those bronzes after the exhibition finishes?
Well, that's a really great question. I mean, we're hoping that there will be enough people who are inspired by lions and have a bit of spare cash to buy them, quite frankly, because, I mean, I'd love to have one of those in my garden. It would be an extraordinary reminder, a daily reminder of our commitment to lions. I'm looking to see whether we might even find another venue who would take them on, perhaps on a, not on 3 months, but on a longer term basis, as a sort of semi-permanent exhibition, where they would still be available for sale, but they would continue to inspire people young and old who just, you know, people do love lions. If you go around the UK and you look at how many lions there are on flags and on commercial products and on pub signs and on heraldic symbols, you know, we love lions. We're way back to Richard the Lionheart. So all I would say is, come on, UK, let's step up for lions.
And I guess this leads us on to the main event, which is happening next month.
Well, now, the main event is our first in-person event for quite a long time. In fact, the last one was in the autumn of 2019. So we haven't done an in-person event for many years. We're very excited about it. I'm particularly excited because my mum, Virginia McKenna, is going to come along and say a few words. It's being held at the fabulous Denby's Wine Estate just outside of Dorking in Surrey. I didn't know Denby's is the biggest vineyard in the United Kingdom.
Oh, well, I didn't know that either.
No, I mean, seriously, who knew? And it's hundreds and hundreds of acres. I mean, it's fantastic, sort of rolling vineyard countryside. You could be in the Loire.
And it produces lovely wines as well.
Say what?
I'm partial to the wines as well.
Yes. Well, there is another upside. That's the wine. But we're going to have that event. We've got some lovely guests coming along. Former gold medalist Sally Gunnell is coming along. which is great. She was a patron of ours since way back, just after she won her gold Olympic gold medal. She's actually climbing Mount Kilimanjaro for us later this year with a team to raise funds. So good for Sally. We've got TV auctioneer James Lewis coming along, lovely Gabby Roslin from BBC Radio London, Dan Richardson, the actor, Don Black, not a name that many people are familiar with, but he is the guy who wrote the lyrics to Born Free.
Oh, lovely.
With John Barry doing the music. So when that whole thing goes off with Matt Monro going, you know, Born Free, that's the lyrics written by Don Black.
Oh, and beautiful.
He is such a generous, kind guy, because a few years ago with Brian May, Brian said, I'd love to do a version of Born Free, a bit more Queen and rock than Matt Monro. And we said, oh gosh, we'd be honored. He said, but the thing is that the song when it was written wasn't quite edgy enough. So we thought, in for a penny, we wrote to Don Black and said, Brian's doing a reversion. Would you be able to think of another stanza that you could put in there that makes it a bit more edgy? Wow. And he came back with four little lines that captured the zeitgeist of the moment. And he wrote, I hope I remember this right, he said, no man should choose your life for you. No man has the right to say you live or die today.
How apt.
It was the anti-trophy hunting, anti-exploitation message, and only Don Black could capture that in four little lines.
The main event is taking place on 23rd of September, Friday 23rd of September. People who maybe think, I want to come along to this, obviously they're going to be raising money for a fantastic charity, but what are you hoping they'll take away from it?
I hope they'll take away a little bit of inspiration, because we're living in times that are, I think, short of inspiration right now. I mean, it doesn't matter, in a sense, what your politics is. From my point of view, I'm not really that inspired by anything at the moment. I feel like we're being slowly crushed, and we need to break out, and we need to recapture the values that we do share, and the values around caring for each other, caring for our planet, making sure that species don't go extinct on our watch, stopping animal abuse, stopping child abuse, looking after people who are displaced or made refugees through no fault of their own. There's so many major issues confronting our planet. I'm not seeing any leaders with a real grasp on the issues. So I'm forced to conclude that we have to do it. You know, there's that expression when people go, oh God, you know, it's like the holes in the road. When are they going to fix them? Metaphorically speaking, I don't think we can rely on that anymore. It's when are we going to fix them? When are we going to do what's necessary instead of always looking for someone else to do it on our behalf? And I think that's the message I hope people will take away from the main event.
And your mum is still very much involved. You mentioned she's coming to the event. Your dad would have been, it was his 100th year. What do you think he would have made of the charity, but also what you've just said about how the world is in, and animals are in such dire straits at the moment?
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, I hope he would be happy with how we've taken the charity forward since he died. He died a long time ago, in 1994. But I hope he'd be happy with what we've done. He would never be satisfied, because he was always, I want to do more, I want to do more. He was a very interesting, complex, compassionate man. He sort of really almost didn't have much of a childhood, because he joined the forces early on in World War II, was dropped into the jungles of Malaya, as it then was, behind enemy lines, as part of the what was called Wingate's long range penetration group, so parachuted in. And then he went into Hiroshima not long after the bomb, and reported on what he saw, because he was part of the Special Operations Executive. And so he, unlike so many of us today, the canvas against which he reflected his life was a huge canvas. And I think he brought some of that emotional intelligence to his acting roles and to his personality. So, as I say, he was always striving for the best, never really satisfied that we'd got there. We were never going to get there. So let's keep on going and in kind of until we do, knowing that actually there's always another hill to climb. But that's the purpose of life, to get up to the next hill and then see a distant horizon and keep going.
With regards to the next generation, because teaching children and the importance of teaching children about not just saving our environment, but obviously a lot of the work you do is not in this country, and it can seem very foreign to people who maybe they're never going to see a tiger or a lion or an elephant unless it is in a zoo. So how can we encourage and motivate the next generation while keeping animals free?
It's a really good question. I think a lot of it is about re-educating ourselves not to have those expectations. You know, if you want to, if you truly, truly, if your mission in life is to go and see the Great Pyramids in Giza, in Egypt, there's no substitute. You know, somehow you'll have to get there. You cannot expect them to be brought to you. And just because we can bring tigers to the heart of Surrey or Suffolk or central London, doesn't mean we should, doesn't mean that it's right. And and you can see the kind that is reflected in some of the youth movements that are around now, which weren't there, you know, certainly when I was a boy, we didn't have anything like Extinction Rebellion. And the frustration that young people feel that they have certainly found their voice, but the struggle is to get those in power, whether in the political world or in the business world or in other forms of leadership, to listen and act on that voice. And the frustration we see that spills over into the demonstrations and the rest of it is because people are desperate for something to happen, for their views to be accommodated, for action to be taken, possibly on some of those issues I mentioned earlier, and yet they see it not happening. I know how important it is to inspire them. And in fact, we're very, very lucky at our main event. We've got Sir Michael Morpurgo, the extraordinary children's author, who's every single book is an inspiration in some form or other. You know, War Horse and everything else that he's done, the Butterfly Line, just the most extraordinary books. I mean, I'll tell you something about Michael. I went to see a performance of a thing called The Best Christmas Present in the World, I think it's called, that he wrote. And he and my mum do a sort of two-hander. It's a recital from the book, and they both play all the characters. And there's a little choir, unaccompanied choir, on their stage as well. Anyway, I went to see this. Where did I see it? I saw it in Ypres in Belgium. And afterwards, we're in the car going back to the hotel, and I'd never seen it before. And I said to Michael, but it's a fantastic story. And you know, where did you find, and I won't go into all the detail, where did you find the desk? I'll use the desk. Mm-hmm. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, where did you find it? I mean, it's and the letter and everything. He said, it is a story, Will.
Oh.
And I said, I mean, seriously, this is like 5 years ago. I'm 63. I was the most gullible 58-year-old going. But he weaves such a spell, and it's so authentic, that I truly, truly thought that this was him retelling a real event. Wow.
That's the mark of a brilliant storyteller.
Absolutely is. And he's a delightful, wonderful guy. He does a lot for kids, not just through the books, but he has his Farms for City Children charity, and he brings children from inner cities out to the countryside, and they spend time residential for a week on a working farm, getting close to fresh air and nature and you know, things that are not wrapped up in a 9-inch tablet. Yeah. Or another computer game.
Of course. And I guess that's why it's so important that we are talking about animals in the wild and making children very much involved in what's going to be their future.
Yes. And as you said earlier, not just children in this country, but kids in Kenya, for example, where, I mean, wildlife in Kenya, although I love it dearly, it's not my wildlife. I mean, it's my wildlife in as much as I feel like I'm a global citizen. It's not my wildlife. I'm not a Kenyan citizen. I will never vote in a Kenyan election, as we had just a few days ago. These are the decision makers of the future, the voters of the future. The values that they take on board today aged 9, 10, 11, hopefully will stand them in good stead when they do become the decision makers of tomorrow. And an appreciation of the natural world and a desire to look after it and not to exploit and plunder it, for me, is one of the core values that we should all aspire to.
Thank you, Will. It's been truly wonderful to speak to you, and I hope the event goes really, really well.
Oh, you're very kind, and I hope we sell out. We're nearly sold out. There's a few tickets still to go, but we are truly, you know, I know everyone says we're nearly sold out, get your ticket now, but actually we are nearly sold out, so get your ticket. For people who do want to come, check out the website.